All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves in Parshas Korach this week. So although, again, of course, the essence of Parshas Korach is the machlokes, is the incredible, terrible debate. It's not even debate. The rebellion of Korach, where Korach essentially questions the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu, the leadership of Aaron. But of course, at the end of the day, what Korach was really questioning was the Ribono Shel Olam. Because remember, all the leadership positions, all of the appointees were made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu did not decide on his own what to do and what not to do. And yet, when Korach rebels against Moshe, Korach rebels against Aaron, he's effectively rebelling against the Ribono Shel Olam. So take a look at number one. Moshe Rabbeinu, to his credit, becomes the ultimate Rodev Shalom. He becomes the individual who is perpetually preoccupied with trying to make peace within the ranks of the Jewish people. Number one, Vayishlach Moshe likro ledasam v'la'arvira b'nei Eliyav v'yomru lo na'ala. So remember again, Moshe Rabbeinu understands, you know, as in most rebellions, or most times that people start fights, and it generally coalesces into a larger group, everybody has their own motivations. So Moshe Rabbeinu realizes Korach has his motivations. But each one of the 250 men who joined Korach's rebellion had their own motivations as well. The way we know this is because if you look at Korach's argument at first glance, it seems counterintuitive. Why? Because remember again, Korach seems to be arguing against Moshe Rabbeinu for the position of the Kohen Gadol. There are 250 other men who join in this rebellion. What's the obvious problem? They can't all be the Kohen Gadol. There's one position. So what are you all arguing about if there's only one position? Elamai, you see again, it's an incredible lesson in human nature. There are just some people who like to fight. And the truth is, all they need is a sibah l'misibah. You know, all they need is an opportunity to get a little bit labadig and to roll up their sleeves and to fight, and they're there. That's why, by the way, again, you see it every single time that happens in the desert. All you need is someone to light the spark of machlokes, and there's like an immediate crowd who is always ready to gather, who is always ready to jump in. So Korach has an agenda. Korach has something. Korach is upset. Korach feels slighted. Korach feels marginalized, all because his ego has been bruised. And there are 250 other guys who kind of get on board with this for a variety of their own reasons. Moshe Rabbeinu tries to make shalom. Moshe Rabbeinu realizes he can't speak to Korach. You know, it's an important idea. You know, the Gemara Maseches Brachos brings down that you're not supposed to be Menachem, you're not supposed to comfort a person. If somebody, Chas Hashem, just endured a loss, and the loss is fresh, so one is not supposed to try to console the mourner while the dead remains unburied. Similarly, again, the Mishnah in Perkei Avos says that Al tiratzes chavercha b'shas kaso. Don't try to make someone feel better when they're angry. This is actually a very important dynamic in relationships, because sometimes people get into an argument, and this could happen in a marriage, this could happen with friends, this could happen with parents and children. People get into an argument, and sometimes, again, especially if you realize that you're the one at fault, you have an incredible burning desire to make shalom. And all you want to do is engage, talk, let's make up, let's reconcile. Meanwhile, the other person is hurt and is offended. So sometimes you have to give people the room to heal. Sometimes if you hurt someone, they're not ready to engage with you yet. You have to give them space. Moshe Rabbeinu realizes he can't engage Korach right now. Korach is unapproachable. So who does Moshe Rabbeinu choose to approach? Dasan Aviram b'nei Eliyav. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, let's talk. And they respond, Vayomru lo na'ala. Not only will we not talk to you, Moshe, we're not even coming to you. Meaning we're not even going to recognize you. We're not even coming to meet you where you are. Hama'at, ki me'eretz zavas chalav udvash la'misinam ha'minbar, ki tistarer alinu gam mistarer. And this is amazing. And this is an incredible also insight into human nature. How people have the ability to create alternate realities. They say to Moshe, is it not enough that you prevented us from going into the land of milk and honey? We scratch our heads and we say, what? We just saw last expression, Moshe Rabbeinu has nothing to do with this. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who said, the land is wonderful, let's go, everything's going to be okay. But yet they turn it around on Moshe. So you didn't allow us to go into the land. You're seizing all the positions of power for yourself. Aflo. El eretz zavas chalav udvash avisanu vatiti elonu nachala sadav akarim ha'inei anashim ha'inei tinakim tinaker lo na'ala. So Adas and Aviram essentially say, Moshe, you've robbed us of everything. You've robbed us of our land, you've robbed us of a future, you've robbed us of hope, of optimism, of everything. And even if you were to gouge out our eyes, We are not coming to you. Vayicha leMoshe, Moshe, and he gets very upset. Vayomer al Hashem, al tefen el min chasam, ribono shel Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is a complex personality. And I say that complex in a complimentary way, because Moshe Rabbeinu is forced to deal with things that, the truth is, are so illogical and so overwhelming. When I say illogical, I'm referring to the Jewish people. He's so, the stress that he has to deal with day in and day out is so ridiculous. So Moshe Rabbeinu gets upset. Vayomer al Hashem, al tefen el minchasam, do not turn to their karbanos. Meaning, even if they try to reconcile with you, God, do not accept their reconciliation. Ki lo chamor echad mehem nasasi, I didn't take a donkey from one of them. Velo hare osias echamem, and I've never harmed one of them. So what I'd like to focus on is what appears to be a seemingly innocuous phrase, the underlying phrase in number one, lo chamor echad mehem nasasi. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ribono shel Olam, I never even took a donkey from them. So the Shaila, the question becomes, what does this mean? Meaning, I understand the first part. Moshe Rabbeinu is fed up. He says, do not turn to their karbanos. I understand Moshe Rabbeinu says, V'lo hari osi esan echa mehem. They're accusing me of such wrongdoing. I've never done anything to them. I've never harmed them. I'm just the opposite. I've only toiled to their benefit. But why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to put in this statement, Lo chamor echa mehem nasasi? I never even took one donkey from them. What's the deeper meaning of that statement? So Rashi HaKadosh writes, in number two, Lo chamor echa mehem nasasi, Rashi says, Lo chamor osho echa mehem natalti, afilu kishalachti mimidjan lemitzrayim, v'erkavti es ishti v'esbana ala chamor, v'hayo li lito osa chamor mishalahem, lo natalti ela mishali. So Rashi says, even when I was dispatched on missions for Klal Yisrael, when I should have been able to use the company car, right? Even when I was working on behalf of the people. So remember again, a king, Moshe Rabbeinu, has unique identity as not just a Navi, but also as a Melech, as a king. So a king has the ability to seize private property, not for his own use, but for use for the needs of the nation. So Moshe Rabbeinu, according to Rashi, is saying, Ribono shel Olam, you are my witness. They are accusing me of such wrongdoing. They're accusing me of such terrible things, and you are my witness that even in situations where I would have been warranted to take their property for my own use, when I was traveling down from Migyon to Mitzrayim, I was going as your emissary. I could have taken Jewish property. I didn't. I never took anything from them. Rather, even things that I was entitled to as a king, as a melech, I never took from the people. The Ramban says in number three, V'tam lo chamor acham nasasi, amar masrani mistar aleihem. Moshe Rabbeinu says, the Ramban's building on Rashi, they're accusing me, ki tistarei arlinu gam histarer. They, being Dasan, Aviram, Korach, the narrative here is that they are accusing Moshe of abuse of authority. That's at the end of the day. That's what they're accusing. You're abusing your authority. You have the keys to the kingdom and you are abusing it. You're using it for your own self-aggrandizement and for your own self-advancement. Moshe says, what are you talking about? Lo chamor echa mehem ma'amasura. Number three. Ma'asura ani mistar aleihem. What? How did I abuse my authority? Ki me'olam lo lakachti mehem afilu chamor echod. La'asos tzirachai kederach hamalochim o asarim. There are certain entitlements that a leader has, a melech has. And one of those, as we said before, is the ability to seize personal property when one is acting on behalf of the collective. Dasan, Aviram, Korach are accusing me of abuse of power. Tell me, Ribono shel Olam, have I ever even taken a donkey? You know, he's using a donkey as like the most basic beast of burden. Have I ever even taken one donkey from them that they are accusing me of abusing my power? In number four, by the way, we're not going to get into this now, but amazingly enough, I should say, sadly enough, one of the ways in which people always try to discredit leaders is abuse of power. I guess the truth is, this you know, folds in well to current events as well. You know, so if you look at number four, we're not going to do it inside. You'll look at it on your own outside. Well, you'll look at it on your own. Shmuel HaNavi complains about the same thing. Shmuel HaNavi again complains that the people made allegations against him about abuse of power. And Shmuel, like Moshe, says the same thing. Ribono shel Olam, as a leader, I have certain rights. Never once did I ever use my entitled rights. Never once did I ever take even though I could have. And yet they have the chutzpah to go ahead and accuse me of somehow abusing my power. Sfarno writes in number 5. So again, so the Kam denominator here, Rashi and the Ramban, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, Lo chamor echa mehem nasasi, as a way of saying, you're accusing me of abusing my power. Not only have I not taken advantage of my power, but I haven't even utilized the basic entitlements of my office. The basic entitlements of my position is that if I need a donkey, I could take a donkey from one of you. If I need something because I'm acting on behalf of the collective, I have the right to take yours. Not only have I not abused my power, I haven't even utilized the inherent rights of my position. The Sfarno goes on. Sfarno says, and by the way, what's amazing over here is who is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to? The Ribbono Shalom. So what's strange about this? The Ribbono Shalom knows. So what does this show you? The incredible frustration of Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is exceptionally important because Moshe Rabbeinu is the master of keeping it together. Right? Remember, even in the, if you look so far, we've had a number of difficult circumstances. Going backwards order, right? We had the episode of the spies. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do in the aftermath of the Meraglim? What does he do? He davens for Klal Yisrael. He advocates. Remember, God says, I'm going to destroy them. And Moshe Rabbeinu comes along and says, no. No, Moshe Rabbeinu advocates on behalf of the Klal. Working back from there, we have the Chet HaEgel, Sin of the Golden Calf. I'm skipping a couple of episodes in between purposely. We'll come back to those. But again, Sin of the Golden Calf, God says, I'm going to destroy the people. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, you're not. Every single time Moshe Rabbeinu advocates on behalf of the people, yet here, we see he's broken. Although, he's been broken once before, which we'll get to. But here you see the incredible frustration of Moshe Rabbeinu. He's having a conversation with the Ribbono. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu needs to get this off his chest. You know, so it teaches us two things. Number one, it teaches us Moshe Rabbeinu is a human being, which is exceptionally, exceptionally important. Meaning in Judaism, the reason why our leaders, our biblical role models, are in fact role models, is because the Torah shows us their human side. If they weren't human, then I can't emulate them. The Ribbono Shel Olam is showing us Moshe Rabbeinu, literally, you'll excuse me for this expression, blowing off steam. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu has had it. He's had it. Everyone has their breaking point. You know, you could be a tzaddik. It's very important to know. You could be a tzaddik for only so long. A tzaddik is, of course, all the ladies could be forever, but the men, right? You have a tzaddik has a breaking point. And he has some point in time when, and this is very important, when people continuously dump on me, if a person always feels that everybody's always unloading on them, there comes a point in time when they say, you know, I can't do it anymore. I can't take it anymore. Now Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us something amazing. Moshe Rabbeinu says, the secret in life is finding a safe place to unload. You see, what ends up happening very often in life is that people, you know, someone once gave me a mashal, somebody who was exceptionally stressed out, gave me once a mashal about what he felt like. He said, I was sitting in my office and there was a cup of Dunkin' Donuts coffee on my desk. You know, Dunkin' Donuts, they fill up the cup very high. So if you take off the lid, so sometimes, again, the surface tension is such, if you look, the liquid is higher than the lip of the cup, but the surface tension keeps it together. But you know what happens if you put one more drop of coffee on there? It spills over. So the first thing you say, I'm telling you, I'm like that cup of coffee. If there's one more drop, I'm telling you it's going to spill over the sides. That's normal. All of us have circumstances. The real kunst, but the important thing is how, when, and where do you let off that steam? Because what's the problem? The problem is a lot of us, if the wrong person wanders into my trajectory and they happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, they're going to feel the wrath of pent-up years of frustration and anger. And of course, A, it's not fair to that individual, and it's not constructive. Everybody needs a release mechanism. But I have to make sure that release mechanism is appropriate and controlled. Because if not, I have the ability to cause even more destruction through my release. So again, Moshe Rabbeinu, he doesn't say this to anyone. Moshe Rabbeinu never has this discussion with anyone other than God. He never talks about it with Aaron, never talks about it with Yahushua, he never talks about it with Tzipora. All he does is he has a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribbono Shel Olam, I know you know the truth, God, because you're God. but I'm going to tell you how I'm feeling right now. I'm going to tell you that I'm shocked and I'm overwhelmed that these accusations could come my way when I've never even taken advantage of the basic entitlements that I am entitled to. The Svarno number 5 takes this a step further. The Svarno says, Lo chamora chamem nasasi, afilu bima sheyehne hejot mechavero, lo nehenisi mehem, shelo kibalti mehem afilu chamor bashala. The Svarno says something even bigger. The Svarno says, Moshe Rabbeinu says like this, not only have I not gone ahead and taken a donkey or anything from them because I am the king and I am entitled to, I never even asked a favor from one of them. I've never even asked another person for something else. Because Moshe Rabbeinu understands, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu and you come over and you ask your neighbor for a cup of sugar or for a donkey or for $10,000, the neighbor's going to say, of course, it's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe says, I never even asked anyone for anything. I don't want to be in that position because I don't want it to be that someone says that they felt compelled to grant my favor because I'm Moshe Rabbeinu. So Rasvarno says, obviously that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't seize property in his capacity in the king. It's even more. Moshe Rabbeinu has been so meticulous and so medukdak, so exact in his interpersonal behavior and recognizing how easy it is for a leader to begin to abuse his power that I haven't even asked the favor. They've only been in the desert for 2 years, but all of these years, and all of that, I have no Klal Yisrael, I've never asked anyone for anything. If you take a look at number 6, you know what? I just need one of these. If you take a look at number 6, Sir Chaim Paltiel says the same idea. He says, "Lo nasasi lashon masui, lo hitanti masui shali al chamoram, velo hariosi la echa mehem lashon reos." Lo hayisi shutaf im shum echa mehem sheyihi elahem lo choshdani shenatalti yosei mene b'shutfus. So Chaim Paltiel takes this even a little bit further. See, he says, lo chamor echamem nasasi means I never even asked someone else to carry my stuff on their donkey. I never even asked someone, when they were already carrying stuff, I never asked them to carry something additional for me. V'lo hare osi esechamem, so it's interesting. We've been translating lo hare osi esechamem to mean, I never wronged another, from a lashon of ra. Ultimately, again, Reb Chaim Paltiel says, what it means is, from not a lashon of ra, but lashon of reos. Never did I go ahead and do any, I never abused a friendship. He's saying, I never entered into anyone with business. I never entered into business with anyone. Meaning, again, I never allowed my position to in any way interfere or influence on my interpersonal relationships with fellow members of Klal Yisrael. So the point that Moshe, so again, what you see over here is the Ramban and Rashi understanding that Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, they're accusing me of abusing power. I've never even taken that which I am entitled to, as a leader, let alone that which I am not entitled to. The Svarno, Reb Chaim Paltiel, both saying the same idea. It's not about abusing leadership position. It's more that I've never even asked for favors. I've never even asked to utilize their stuff. I've never even done the things that people commonly do with one another simply to remain above board at all costs. But perhaps there's another deeper understanding to what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. And for this, we're going to have to go back to last week's parasha. The first time that Moshe Rabbeinu really has a breakdown, again, not in front of the people, it just happens with him and God. But the first time that we see Moshe Rabbeinu, for lack of a better term, lose it, because he lost it, was in last week's parasha. Not anger. It's lost it a feeling of being overwhelmed. You see Moshe Rabbeinu drowning in a sea of overwhelmed kite. So look at number 9. This is last week's parasha, Baloscha. Vayishma Moshe es ha'am bocha lemishpachosav, ish lefesach ohalo, vayichar af Hashem ma'ot ubenei Moshe ra. So again, Moshe Rabbeinu hears the people crying. Now what are they crying about? The truth is, you know, the great difficulty of Klal Yisrael is, it's never exactly clear what's wrong. They'll tell you it's this, or they'll tell you that it's that. But at the end of the day, it's not really about those things. Those are just excuses that they're giving. So Moshe Rabbeinu hears them. Families, entire families, crying. Kadosh Baruch Hu gets upset. Moshe Rabbeinu is very upset as well. Vayomer Moshe al Hashem. So remember, What they're asking for, Rabbi, just the context, is they want meat. They want meat. First of all, they have mun. Second of all, if they want meat, then what? They have plenty of animals. There is no shortage of animals that they have, right? Habakar, Batson, they have plenty. They have everything. So, but yet again, it's a pretext. For whatever the reason, and again, this is not about the psychology of Klal Yisrael, but for whatever the reason, they're upset. The truth is, they're really upset with themselves. They're unhappy with themselves. When you're upset, you know, this is the famous Varta of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov says, you know, the first complaint of Klal Yisrael after they left Egypt was when? First complaint was by Mara. By Mara. Klal Yisrael crosses the sea. They come to a place called Mara. And the Torah says they could not drink the waters, kimarimheim, for they were bitter. So the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh points out, he says, it should have said, kimarim haya, or kimar haya. The water in Mara was bitter. Instead it says, kimarimheim, they were bitter. The Baal Shem Tov says something amazing. He says, the bitterness is not referring to the water. The bitterness is referring to the people. The difference is, if you're bitter, everything tastes bitter. If you're unhappy, then everything is in a state of disrepair. This was the fundamental issue with Klal Yisrael. Kimarim heim. They were just unhappy. And again, why they weren't happy, what they were unhappy about, not our topic for tonight. But in any event, they're stuck in a state of systemic unhappiness. And when you are systemically unhappy, whatever the smallest trigger is, you're in the mood for a steak and the steak's not here at your doorstep, you're going to get upset. So Moshe Rabbeinu, again, looking back to number 9. Number 9, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Moshe el Hashem, lama hari osa la'avdecha? Listen to this. Now listen to how Moshe speaks to God. Moshe says, Ribono shel Olam, why have you treated me so badly? Wow. Why have you treated me so badly? V'lama lo matzasi chin b'enecha lasum es masa kola amaze alai. Essentially, Moshe Rabbeinu says to God, what did I ever do to you? What did I ever do to you? Why exactly have you punished me like this? Why do you put me at the helm of these people? Now listen to this. I should have underlined this, but you can underline it on your sheets. Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. Ha'anochi harisi es kala amazeh. Did I conceive this people? Imanochi elaratiu. Did I birth them? Kisomar elai sa'eu b'chekecha kasher yisa amenes hayonek ala adam asher nishbat alavosav. Did I give birth to them that you say to me, carry them in your bosom as the nurse carries the suckling to the land you promised their forefathers? Yet Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, am I their mother? Am I their mother? A mother has to put up with a heck of a lot of stuff. I am not their mother. So why do I have to deal with this? What did I do wrong in life that you put me in this position? You see, these are strong words. Moshe, this is literally, Moshe, why have you mistreated me so badly to make me the leader of this people? And this is Moshe essentially says, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this by myself anymore. And this, of course, is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu appoints 70 elders to help Moshe Rabbeinu go ahead and lead the Jewish people. So this Lashon over here, Ha'anochi harisi es kala amazeh, have I conceived this people? Imanochi elaratiu, did I birth this people? Am I like the nursing mother who is constantly forced to hold her child in her arms and nourish her child? Why is this my job? Why is this my responsibility? What we, at some point in time, I can't do, at some point, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. See, here's what's amazing. Moshe Rabbeinu says, now let's analyze this a little bit. Take a look at number 10. So the Ebenezer writes, Harisi, Ha'ani Imam, Yilarti, Ani Aviem. So Moshe is saying, am I their mother? Am I their father? Now the Ksava Kabbalah, this is Rav Mecklenburg, says something quite amazing. He writes in 11 Aleph, Ha'anochi Harisi, Emanochi Yilarti, Kilomar, In b'yachalosi l'estnaigi ma'am ki esnagos ha'em im b'na, asher osu v'holidoso, ki ha'em huchan la b'teva l'malos b'chosha, teshukas b'na l'anikeo mishod tanchumeo u'mechava, u'lahashki tamis ha'emis yonko b'vichyosu ala. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know, Ribono Shel Olam, if you give a woman a child, so a woman has the ability to silence the cries of the child, if the child is hungry. So the mother has the ability to feed that child. But he says, Ribono shel Olam, what you've made me is like a father with a newborn. What does a father know how to do with a newborn? Hand it off to the mother, right? That's what a father knows how to do. Meaning, at the end of the day, a father's on a serious level, the father's ability to take care of that child is limited. Remember, this is the days before formula, right? So a father's ability to take care of his child is limited. So Mecklenburg writes in Ksav HaKabbalah, he says, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, he's saying, the problem is, you have made me hanochi arisa nilati. You know what, Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you're going to make me like their mother, give me the tools to mother them. But you haven't even given me the tools to mother them. Instead, what you've done is you've made me like a father. And he writes over here, Kasher Yisaha Omein. Omein, interestingly enough, is Lashon Zohar, is male, as opposed to Omenes. So he says, you've made me a father of infant children. Well, as a father, when the children are crying, I can't give them what it is that they need. So why are you setting me up to fail? See, what Moshe Rabbeinu is really saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the following. The problem here is that you haven't given me the tools. I'm not saying I can't do it. I'm saying I can't do it the way you've structured the job. It's just simply impossible because the people are needy. The people have an incredible voluminous amount of needs, and I am not equipped with the tools to be able to meet them. And therefore, again, I can't do it. I'm giving up. I'm yielding. I'm accepting defeat, not because I want to, but because there's absolutely no way for me to pull this off. Take a look at number 12. The Das Kanim says it even stronger. He says, "Kisomar leisabich lekecha kilulei ze." Moshe says, "God, I'm going to be honest with you. Had you not commanded me to be here right now, hayisi boreach v'holech." Moshe Rabbeinu says, "I would have been on the first flight out of the Sinai. Right? If I didn't have so much respect for you, Rebbeinu Shalom, had I not felt a compelling need to heed your word, I wouldn't even be here." But if you take a look at number 13. Rav Soloveitchik, Zeicher Tzadik Livracha, has a magnificent, magnificent insight into this exchange. This was a shiur given by the Rav, which was transcribed. That's why, again, it doesn't flow as well as something that was written. It was transcribed. But look what the Rav says. What is an omen? Now, the Rav is very intrigued by this because Moshe Rabbeinu's imagery is quite profound. Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Am I an omen? Am I a nursing mother? Did I conceive them? Did I birth them? Do I have to nurse them?" So Moshe Rabbeinu is constantly referring to the maternal metaphor. I'm not their mother. So the Rav says, Moshe Rabbeinu, why? Meaning, what could Moshe Rabbeinu have simply have said? Fear Moshe. What can you say? I can't do it. I can't do it. These people are impossible. And again, it's God. God knows them better than you know them. So you don't have to get into a whole arichos. You don't have to get into a whole thing about nursing mother, birthing mother. You know, just I can't do it. The Rav understands that Moshe Rabbeinu is expressing a different kind of frustration. So watch this. Number 13. What is an omen? It is a nursing mother or father. Of course, a nursing mother teaches the baby. Perhaps the mother is the best and most important teacher in the life of a baby. But she does something else. The Rebbe teaches the Talmidim. The nursing mother, in addition to teaching, carries the baby in her bosom or in her arms, as a nurse carries a sucking child. What does this mean? Usually the father doesn't do it. The mother does it. The father has no patience for that. It has more meaning than the literal meaning of the word. The teacher does teach his disciple, but the disciple very seldom becomes part of him. When the mother teaches the baby becomes a part of her. The mother, when she rears the baby, has one calling, one purpose: to protect the baby. The omen, or the mother, basically do not belong to themselves. Many may be very critical of my statement, but this is true according to Yadus. A mother has no life of her own. She belongs to the infant. At least as long as the infant is helpless and is exposed to the dangers of a hostile environment, she belongs to that infant. The underlined lines. Moshe discovered now that teaching is not enough for a leader of Yisrael. A teacher, no matter how devoted, has a life of his own. That his job is nursing, carrying the baby in his arms, watching every step, guessing the baby's needs. A baby cannot say what she wants, you have to guess. Feeling pain when the baby cries and being happy when the baby is cheerful. Teaching or instructing her good performances, but that is not everything. Moshe, reconciled with his role as a teacher and leader of adults, began to doubt his ability to play the role of an omen or a mother nurse. Listen to his words. Did I conceive all these people? Did I bear them? That you say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries an infant? Moshe discovered something tragic in a mother's life. From now on, as an individual, he has no rights at all. No right to rejoice whenever God will be good to him. As a private person, he is not entitled to enjoy life as an individual, to be happy in any ordinary way, like any other human being, because his children will never belong to Moshe. He lost his family. He became the mother nurse of Klal Yisrael, no family of his own. This is what the rabbis say. He separated himself from his wife. Remember, again, Chazal point out that Moshe did not live with Tzipora. Did not live with Tzipora. Now, the reason for this on a basic level is that Moshe Rabbeinu, because he was always in constant communication with Ribbono Shel Olam, had to be in a state of preparedness. It isn't just his wife from whom he separated. It's the wife and children, two lovely boys, his sister, his brother. He could not share his joy with them. They could not share their joy with him. He is the father of Yisrael, the father of Klal Yisrael. And that is what it means. The role of as a nurse carries a sucking child was imposed upon him during the rebellion of the Misonanim. He separated himself not only from his mate, but also from his children. Where are Moshe's children? Do we ever come across Moshe's children? There was a census taken in the desert at the beginning of the 40 years and at the end of the 40 years. Are Moshe's children mentioned? Not once. On the other hand, Moshe had no right to give any preference or to give an additional second to his son because he was the father of every child within the Jewish community. So Moshe lost his children. He became the omen, the nursing mother of Klal Yisrael. A very profound statement. So what does the Rav saying? What's happening over here? Moshe Rabbeinu has a startling epiphany. What's the epiphany? You see, he thought that what was his role? He thought his role was Rabbeinu, to be the teacher. In fact, that's how we refer to Moshe. Right? Refer to Moshe as Moshe Rabbeinu, he's the teacher. And he realized that the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't need him to be a teacher. There are plenty of other teachers. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed him to be was a mother. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, you are the mother of Klal Yisrael. And just like that mother has no life besides her infant, right? That baby, that infant is the totality of her existence. So at the end of the day, Moshe, you are the mother, you are the omenes, you are the omen of Klal Yisrael. But if we take it a step further, there's something else that defines a mother. You see, the Rav's description over here is quite dramatic in terms of the all-encompassing nature of motherhood. But there's one thing that the Rav doesn't mention. And what defines motherhood?
Love.
Love. You know, the fundamental difference between a mother and a father. And whether fathers admit this or don't admit it, I think it's true for the most part. Fathers love their children conditionally. What do I mean by that? Now, what that means is that paternal love is in some way tied to accomplishment. Meaning, I love my child no matter what. I love my child no matter what, of course, that basic love is there. But there's no question that paternal love grows greater and diminishes depending on what my kid does with his or her life. If they do great things, there's more love. If they mess up badly, there's less love. There's always love that's there, but the love waxes and wanes depending on the accomplishment. Maternal love is unconditional. A mother knows how to love her child. You know, every mother, even if the child, as long as you're not like an axe murderer, right? Every mother could find the good. And maybe even, it depends who you killed. If with the marriage, right? A mother could always find the good in her child, right? A mother could always find something redeeming and something beautiful, even if the child on a, what we'll call, an objective playing field is not all that great. A mother is always able to see for a very simple reason. Why? So why is maternal love and paternal love so different? It's very simple. Because that child is a piece of the mother. That child, I mean, it's true, a father contributes genetic material. A father contributes DNA, there's no Shiloh. But that child, its child is biologically a part of him. But at the end of the day, that child is not a part of his body. The mother nurtures that child for 9 months inside of her. The mother births that child into this world. And as such, again, there is a love that cannot even Every mother knows what that love is, and every child who is privileged to receive that love knows what that love feels like. And in this moment, Moshe Rabbeinu has this little bit of a nervous breakdown because he says, oh my gosh, I just realized what my job is, right? Meaning, I thought this whole time my job was to give drushas and shiurim and bring down Torah from the heavens to Har Sinai and to disseminate it to the people and to teach. And then I realized, while that is a piece of my job is to love them. And by the way, my job is to love them no matter what. My job is to love them with unconditional maternal love. My job is to see the good in them even when they're not so good. My job is to see the beauty in them even when they're soiled. My job is to see the magnificence in them even when they're doing some really bad stuff. Here they are in the middle of complaining for meat. And Moshe says, I have no idea what the heck is going on over here. They've got mun every single day. They have plenty of animals. They're a bunch of nunnikim, meaning they're only trying to make trouble. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, stop. You can't say stuff like that. You're not allowed to talk like that. Because a mother doesn't talk to their better children. A mother only has words of praise, sometimes constructive criticism. Right? But even that always comes with love. Even that never comes from a desire to put down, from a desire to berate. It's just the opposite. It all stems from an incredible desire, ultimately, again, to allow my child to see the beauty that I know they possess. So Rav Soloveitchik says over here that it's in this moment that Moshe Rabbeinu has the most startling discovery of his 40-year career, which is my job is to be a mother. My job is to be, and by the way, not like a mother of like teenagers or of young adults. My job is to be a mother of a newborn. Chal Yisrael is a newborn. They need constant attention, they need constant nourishment, and they need constant love. And it is my job to give that to them. Now watch this. Take a look. Take a look at number 14. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Eberditcher brings down something beautiful over here. So the Rebbe says, he says, Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi, v'lo hari osi asai. Oh, actually, before that, I'll just show you something interesting. Skip for a moment to number 15. The Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah said the following. Kishem, we actually just studied this past Shabbos. Kishim shatamidim chayavim b'chvod harav. So the same way that students are obligated to respect the Rebbe, kach harav tzarech lechabir es hatamidim olekarvon. So too it is the job of a Rebbe to respect his students and to bring them closer. Kach amru, as the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, yichvod tamidcha chaviv alav kishalach. The covet of your Talmud should be as near and dear to you as your own. V'tzarech adam lihizar b'tamidav uli ohavon. Look what the Rambam says. It's not enough just to educate your students. If you're going to be a real Rebbe, and by the way, we're all Rebbeim, we're all Moros, we're all teachers to someone, right? So whether it's our own children or others, but the idea ultimately is, you want to influence someone, lo ahavam, you have to love them. Shem abanim hamahanim lo olam azoli olam abad. The Rambam says, where do we get this idea that a Rebbe is supposed to love his students? Who says? Maybe the job of a Rebbe is to be able to go ahead and distill information in a clear and concise fashion so that the students have the ability to go ahead. So we know this is not true because anyone who's gone through the school system, you know, remember, I'll only speak for myself. I remember very, very little of what I learned in school. I mean, like, nursery through high school, right? Very, I feel bad. My parents watch this shiur online and they're thinking about all of the tuition they paid, right? But the truth is, I venture to say most people remember very little of their schooling. What you do remember are the teachers who loved you. What you do remember are the teachers who were kind to you. What you do remember are the teachers who were there to help you out in a difficult time. And those are the things that leave a positive influence. Those are the things, those are the most dramatic educational moments, right? Those are the things that ultimately cement and create your identity. What you learned in literature is nice and it opens new vistas. What you learned in Chumash is nice. It's wonderful. It's Torah. But at the end of the day, those are not the things that forge your identity as a person. It's when you had a Rebbe, where you had a teacher who loved you, who you felt cared about your success. The Rambam says, where does the Rambam get this? The Rebbe is supposed to love his Talmidim. Where does the Rambam get it from? The Rambam gets it from Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was told in last week's parasha that no, you're not just a Rebbe, you're not just a teacher, you have to be a mother. You have to be a mother and you have to carry around your infant and love her and nurture and take care of her every moment. Now back to number 14. Rabbi Levi Yitzhak says, now we're going to understand the different interpretation of this pasuk. Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi, velo hareosi es echad mehem. So remember again, we were asking, so we stopped a few minutes ago, we were talking about this pasuk in this week's parasha. Moshe says, I never even took one donkey from them. Look what Rabbi Levi Yitzhak Abedicha says. Haklal, Moshe Rabbeinu hayo ma'ale kol Yisrael, v'hayo medabik as So Moshe Rabbeinu made it his life's work to uplift every single Jew and to connect constantly with every single Jew. V'zehu lo chamor echad mehem nasasi kilomar lo nasasi guf echad mi Yisrael rak kol Yisrael nasasi v'lo chin lo davakti l'ish echad mi Yisrael rak l'chol Yisrael v'zeh lo chamor. Rabbi Levi Yitzhak says something magnificently amazing. We've been translating chamor as donkey. Chamor is, let's see, it's also from Lashon of chomrius, which means material. The Rebbe says that lo chamor echam mehem nasasi means, chamor, he says, is a reference to people, to material beings. Lo chamor echam mehem nasasi, Ribon Hashem, you know, I didn't just love one of them. Rather, I loved all of them. Do you see what's unfolding over here in this week's parasha? In last week's parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Moshe, I can't do it anymore. Because, Ribbono Shel Olam, you want me to be a mother, and I don't have the tools. And by the way, I just want to point out, you don't have all the psukim here, but I just will tell you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never answers Moshe Rabbeinu. He never responds. He says, fine, we'll get you 70 more people to help out. He never responds. Why does he never respond? Because the divine silence is an answer in and of itself. Moshe Rabbeinu says, what? You need me to be their mother? And Ribbono Shel Olam is silent. And Moshe Rabbeinu understands that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's silence is a resounding yes. I need you to be their mother. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu do in this particular, with this particular piece of advice? Rabbi Levi Yitzhak, lo chamor echad mehem nasasi. Ribbono Shel Olam, I want to be clear. I don't have favorites. I didn't love one and not the other. Lo chamor echad, it's not that I loved one and not the other. I love them all. Now go back to number one for just a moment. I'm going to show you something amazing. Take a look. Back in number one, Pasuk Tesvav. So watch how the Pasuk plays out. So number one, verse 15, Pasuk Tesvav. Vayichar l'Moshe ma'od. Moshe Rabbeinu is terribly upset. Why is he upset? Understandably upset, because Klal Yisrael is engaging in all of this horrible behavior. Dasan and Aviram are snubbing him. Korach is fermenting a rebellion. Vayichar l'Moshe ma'od. So Moshe Rabbeinu gets upset. And what does he say? Vayomer el Hashem al teifen el min chasam. Ribon sha'olam. Do not accept their karbanos. There's an asnachta there. That piece of the trap means stop here. Stop here. There's a pause. What happens? See, Moshe Rabbeinu is angry. He's angry, and understandably so. He's angry. So what happens? He pauses. And what does he say in the next breath? Lo chamor echad mehem nasasi. I have to love them all. I have to stop. I have to regroup. I can't just love the good ones. I can't just love the ones who behave. I can't just love the ones who are always in line. I can't just love the ones who have frum. I can't just love the ones who perform the mitzvos. I can't just love the ones who are happy that I'm a leader. I have to live a life of lo chamor echad mehem nasasi. I can't play favorites. My job is to be a mother, and my job is to love them all. Moshe Rabbeinu composes himself. Moshe Rabbeinu gathers his emotions together, and he remembers from last week's parsha that he is the omein, that he is the nursing mother with the simple yet profoundly difficult charge of loving his children no matter what. That's what's unfolding over here. So again, we have Rashi and the Ramban who are saying, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I never even took my entitlements. We have the Svarno and Rav Chaim Paltiel saying, I never even asked them for favors. But now we have the Rav and Rabbi Levi Yitzhak who are teaching us know something much more profound is unfolding over here. It's in last week's parsha that Moshe Rabbeinu realizes his true role, and it's in this week's parsha that he begins to live it. In that moment where he's being mistreated so badly, in that moment when his kindness is being taken advantage of, in that moment when he's literally being trampled all over, his first response is, God, don't even accept their kabaros. Takes a deep breath. Lo chamor echa mehem. I can't just love some of them. My job is to love all of them. So we think to ourselves, what a beautiful lesson. Moshe Rabbeinu is such a great man. I'm so happy I'm not Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? That seems to be the take-home message, but I'll show you something amazing. Take a look at the last source, number 16. The pasuk says, Lo sikom b'lo sitar es b'nei amecha, v'yahavta l're'acha kamocha ani Hashem. Literally, now the pasuk is telling me lo sikom means I can't take revenge. Lo sitar means I can't bear a grudge. I can't bear a grudge. Again, it means more than not bearing a grudge. You know, Rashi explains that if Reuven comes to me, I call Reuven and ask Reuven to borrow his axe. And he says no. So in the comma, revenge is if Reuven comes back to me and he says, can I borrow your axe? And I say, no, you didn't let me, I'm not going to let you. Netira, lo sitar, is I say to Reuven, sure, I'm happy to lend you the axe. You know why? Because I'm not like you. What does that show? That shows that I'm harboring animosity in my heart. So Torah says, you can't go out and take revenge. You can't harbor animosity. You have to love your fellow as you love yourself. I am Hashem, your God. So it struck me that it's so interesting. Why are these two concepts juxtaposed? Right? Meaning, I understand, God, I have to love my fellows and love myself. But why is the introduction to that pasuk, lo sikom v'lo sitor, don't take revenge, don't bear animosity? What is the Torah Kedosha teaching us? The Torah Kedosha is teaching us, I think, a profound and powerful idea, which is, who does the mitzvah of Yehavta l're'acha kamocha apply to? Who is it that we have to love in this world? Who is it amongst our nation, our people that we have to love? Even those people who you would like to take revenge against because they've mistreated you. Even those people who you harbor animosity against because they have hurt you. Even those individuals, v'yahavta l're'acha kamocha. A Jew has to learn to love the other, even if the other is not so lovable. A Jew has to learn to love the other, even if the other has actively wronged me. Now, I want to be clear. I don't have to go out of my way to be around that person. You know, there's something called, you know, distance love. Distance love, right? Distance love is, I love you very much, but I don't want to be anywhere near you. I love you. I don't have any animosity towards you. It's not a good idea for us to be together. But at the end of the day, I love you. I love you. I have feelings of love towards you. So the Torah Kedosha is teaching us such an incredible idea. The juxtaposition, because if a reporter would have just said, v'yahavta l're'acha kamocha by itself, then you would have said, of course I have to love my fellow. Who's my fellow? Who does re'acha apply to? People who are nice to me. People who are like me. People who have done good things to me. No. Lo sikom v'lo sitar, es b'nei amecha, v'yahavta l're'acha kamocha. I have to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. And I have to learn to love those, even if they have wronged me. Again, I don't have to put myself in harm's way. I don't have to go ahead and necessarily associate. I don't have to go out of my way to be around those individuals. But it's called distance loving. I have the ability to love my fellow Jew, even if somehow they have visited some type of hurt, some type of harm upon me. That's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of us. And by the way, look how the pasuk ends. Ani Hashem, I am God. Why does the pasuk end with Ani Hashem? Because you know, what's the hardest part of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The hardest part is that I have to love God when He does things I like and when He does things I don't like. So the Ribono Shel Olam says, the same way Ani Hashem, you love me in times of good and times of challenge. I'm asking you to apply that same metric to the love you have for your fellow Jew. Lo sikom v'lo sitar v'yahavta l're'acha kamocha. Don't just love those who are lovable. Even love those who have hurt you. Even love those who have harmed you. Extricate yourself from harm's way. Don't put yourself in the middle of things. But find a way to love those, even if at the end of the day, they do things that aren't very lovable. And where does all of this come from? Again, we trace all of this back ultimately to Moshe Rabbeinu. The great lesson that Moshe Rabbeinu has taught us is that although Moshe Rabbeinu was charged with the sacred task of being a mother, we are not. That role is reserved for a specific manhige Yisrael, specific leaders of Klal Yisrael, who are obligated to be like the mother. So I might not be obligated to be like the nursing mother for the child of Klal Yisrael, but I am supposed to be like Moshe Rabbeinu, that I am supposed to work on myself. Lo chamor echa mehem nasasi. Don't just love the lovable ones. Don't just love the nice ones. Don't just love the ones who are like you. But even the difficult ones, even the abrasive ones, even the ones who have visited some hurt or some harm upon you in the past, We have to find the koach to be like Moshe Rabbeinu and to love them as well. All right, we'll stop over here. This is the last shiur for the summer. We will, Amir Tashem, continue, God willing, at the end of August. There'll probably be another shiur around the 3 weeks' time, like Rosh Chodesh Av, Shavasra B'Tam was that time, so you'll stay tuned to the email. Have a wonderful evening.